How we handle disagreements depends on what's at stake. Different issues, as we discovered in our last session, need to be handled differently. Now let's take a look at some of the things and the disagreements that happen and see how we can respond to each one of these. First of all, which we started to talk about in our last session, disagreements due to serious doctrinal issues. In that controversy in Acts 15, Paul was not about to amicably part company with the other apostles. The question was there concerning the gospel, and it was a big one. Is the gospel preached as a free gift from God, or is circumcision and the law of Moses required? This was Paul's go-to-the-wall issue. This was the hill on which he was going to plant his flag. He was not about to back down from this, but he recognized that there was a potential problem with the other apostles. Now, we get some clues as to what was going on in this book, and I want us to take just a few minutes to look at that. In this letter, which was written about the same time as Acts 15 and refers to the same controversy, Paul was staunch and he was unbending. Notice what it says in verse 5 of Galatians 2. We did not yield in subjection to them for even an hour, so the truth of the gospel would remain with you. With Peter, Paul was very terse. He said in Galatians chapter 2, verse 11, when Cephas, that was Paul's way of referring to Peter, he used his Hebrew name, when Cephas came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. Peter, in Paul's estimation, was supporting the false doctrine that was being propagated by these men that were supposedly from Jerusalem. And in so doing, he was compelling the Gentile believers in Antioch to keep the law and circumcision. And when the men who claimed they were from James arrived, Peter withdrew from the fellowship with the Gentiles, apparently because he feared the thinking of these men. Paul later warned the Ephesian elders in Acts chapter 20. He says this, and I just want you to catch how serious this is to Paul. He says, be on guard for yourselves, he speaks to the Ephesian elders, for all the flock. I know that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. And from among your own selves, men will arise, speaking perverse things to draw away disciples after them. If false teaching could be supported by Peter, by his actions, then false teachings could come from any direction, even, as Paul says, from among your own selves. I pray, and I hope you pray as well, for the wisdom to know when false teaching is truly at issue and when it is not. And then to stand firm with the gospel in no uncompromising way. Disagreements are going to happen, but when they happen around serious doctrinal issue, that is a time to stand firm and unbending and not to compromise. But now there are some disagreements and controversies that are not over serious doctrine or heavy things. I would call these disagreements due to petty issues. These are small and narrowly defined and narrowly focused things that don't rise to the level of serious theology. Some people, it seems, thrive on theological argumentation on what is the meaning of the 10 pegs of the tabernacle in the Old Testament, or to engage in doctrinal debates. We kind of wink our eye at the medieval theologians who debated on how many angels could dance on the head of a pin. For some, it's a hobby. It's a way of life. For some, it justifies their existence that they can take a stand on some minute thing. Certain sects of the Amish and the Old Order Mennonite in North America divide over things like whether clothes can have buttons and buttonholes versus clothes with hooks and clasps. We may smile at these examples, but in our churches sometimes we succumb to giving a lot of discussion to small things. I remember one church almost divided because of the color of paint that was going to be used in a renovation project. I think of Paul's letter to Timothy, where he wrote, instruct certain men not to teach strange doctrines, nor to pay attention to myths and endless genealogies, which give rise to mere speculation, rather than furthering the administration of God, which is by faith. In other words, don't let anybody get you all caught up in a wrap over small things. Elders must be able to recognize such things and put a halt to them. They're time wasters. They depress the spiritual life of the church. Paul instructs the Colossians to avoid the exotic and the fantastical experiences. Let no one, he says in Colossians 2:18, let no one defraud you of your prize by delighting in self-abasement and the worship of the angels, taking his stand on visions he has seen, inflated without cause by his fleshly mind. In other words, Paul says, these aren't things to disagree about. These are things to just simply put a stop to. Notice what Paul says to Titus in chapter 1 and verse 10. He says, there are many rebellious men, empty talkers and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision, who must be silenced. Why? Because they are upsetting whole families, teaching things that they should not teach for the sake of sordid gain. In other words, there's many reasons why people debate theology. Sometimes the reason is not for theological purity, but for their own personal benefit. There may be a place for discussing with people their concerns, but there comes a time of cutting off discussion. When it is wasting time and when the elders determine it is counterproductive to the well-being of the church, that is the time to simply say, enough is enough. Elders must make the decision of which issues rise to the level of importance and which are simply nonsense or non-essential. Now, there's a third kind of disagreement that's somewhere in between. It's disagreements that are due to differing perspectives. Elders should be of the same mind in the important things of doctrines, but yet we can oftentimes disagree on smaller things. Philippians 2 and verse 2 says, make my joy complete, Paul writes to the Philippians, by being of the same mind, maintaining the same body, or same love, united in spirit, intent on one purpose. Sometimes, although elders may be agreed on the big issues, sometimes we disagree on the specifics of how to do things. Sometimes godly men simply disagree. The supreme example, of course, is Paul and Barnabas. Their disagreement over whether to include John Mark again in their second mission tour around the Eastern Mediterranean. This wasn't a doctrinal issue, but it was a difference in mission strategy. But it was, nonetheless, it was a sharp, divisive issue for Paul and Barnabas. Read what it says in Acts 15 and verse 39. It says, and there occurred such a disagreement that they separated from one another, and Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed away to Cyprus, but Paul chose Silas and left, being committed by the brethren to the grace of the Lord. Notice, the divine author says it was a sharp disagreement. But notice also what the divine author does not include. God didn't take sides. There's no indication textually to indicate whether Paul was wrong in being bullheaded or whether Barnabas was wrong in being bullheaded. It just simply doesn't say. Many things might be and have been suggested about finding fault, but the bottom line is God didn't. In a sense, both of them were adamant, both of them were resistant to giving in to the others. Sometimes decisions cannot be solved to everyone's liking, and there is a time for two parties to separate and go their own way. This is difficult in a church setting, though, isn't it? I know of a brother who came to our fellowship a number of years ago, and he was fully involved, a delightful brother, and he had good fellowship, and he loved the fellowship, but his heart was working with children in the inner city. No one else in our fellowship had the same burden, and that was disconcerting to him. He struggled with it. He wanted the church to become more involved, but there wasn't a burden. Our burdens were in other areas of ministry and other people groups. He finally decided to join a church that had the same burden as he had. He left, but he left with no animosity, and he fully explained his reasoning. It was simply a difference in whom to reach. Now, some disagreements, surprisingly, maybe not so surprisingly, some disagreements are due to fear. I think of the 12 spies during Exodus times. 10 of them feared the giants, and 2 of them said, we can conquer the land the Lord has given to us. There was clearly a disagreement. But the 10 were able to persuade the Israelites, the majority, to decide against God's mandate to take the conflict, to take the land. Now, partly we can see very clearly there was a fear of conflict and the fear of failure. They were unwilling to engage in disagreement in order to deal with the problem. Some people just want to keep peace at all costs. Now, I'm not talking so much of the 10-2 spies in Israel. They spoke their peace, but sometimes in our church, people have a fear of conflict. I think it's a mistaken understanding of what Jesus prayed in the upper room in John chapter 17, where he says to his Father, that they may all be one, even as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they also may be in us, so that the world may believe that you sent me. The goal is unity and harmony, yes. And the world is impressed when the church is operating in unison. But we need to air our differences so we can work through them and have a much better chance of gaining that unity that God, Jesus has desired for us. We can't be afraid to face conflict. We need to air out all sides of the issues, whether it's the doctrinal issue or the practical issues, so that the church is able to arrive at a unified conclusion. Notice back in Acts 15, it says, it seemed good to us having become of one mind. And in verse 28, for it seemed good to the Holy Spirit and to us. There was a controversy, there was disagreement, but by dealing with it, they were able to come together and come to a unity. It took them time to come of one mind. It came first by discussing their differences. When we fear disagreements and we don't confront them, the church stagnates. Disagreements increase with no resolution. There's suppressed anger and bitterness can fester. Churches split and churches die. I know of a church, it's quite interesting, he takes the reality of that seriously, and they teach in their small group ministry, they teach believers how to disagree in a healthy way. I think that's wonderful. Elders must lead the way. We must learn how to disagree and work through our differences in love. Another form of fear, though, is when we fear what others may think, being a people pleaser. When an elder tries to make everyone happy. Now, elders aren't politicians trying to get elected, and if I had the time, I would talk about the appointment of elders versus the election of elders. But we as elders are accountable to God, and it is Him we are trying to please. And sometimes that means an elder will make decisions that people won't like. A third kind of fear that can paralyze decision-making is the fear of failure. Don't let fear of making mistakes cripple decision-making. Let me just assure you right now, if you're going to be an elder that's going to make a difference in your church, you will make mistakes. You better just accept it now so you get used to it. Keeping to the tried and true things is safe, of course. We know they work, even if only marginally. I remember in a church that I was involved in once, the young families in the church were agitating to make the Sunday evening service earlier. They just couldn't go at that time of night because their children had to be in bed, they had to be ready for school. And so I heard this and I went to the older folks and I said to some of the older ones, we'd like to consider changing the times of our Sunday evening meetings. And the older folks were saying, well, no, that's right, would put it right in our dinner time if we made that change, and we don't want to do that. I tried to reason with them, the older folks, that the younger ones needed the growing in their faith. They were younger and they had children and, you know, we need to accommodate them. So we went ahead and made the change. The result? We had fewer attending at the earlier hour. The young people, younger families didn't come anyway, and some of the older folks dropped off because it was dinner time. The decision didn't work out. It was a mistake. But we made it, and we are going to make mistakes. Hopefully more decisions are better than those. There's always a risk, but we can't let risks of failure paralyze us. Well, what about when elders make decisions? How do they handle disagreement among themselves? In our next session, we will look at the policy one church used that helped guide elders through disagreements. It's one thing for all the elders to be united and to interact with the congregation, but when the elders themselves disagree, we're going to talk about that in our next session.